G'day everyone, and welcome today to today's show. And today we've got Cheryl Gottschall back. How you going, Cheryl?
Oh, I'm great, Pete. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for coming back on. It's been almost a year since you were last on.
I had a look yesterday. When was the last time I did the show? It was like your 11th episode.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. Yeah, doesn't time go fast?
It does. I was actually living up that way for a little while just near Mary.
Yes, I know that. I had planned to come up and see you, make plans to do that, and then the next thing I knew, you'd gone down to Melbourne.
Met a girl and
I know,
away.
It's so lovely. That's great.
Now, for those who don't know, they could go back to the last episode and watch that to find out a bit more about yourself and your story, but you're the president of UFO Research Queensland, have I got that correct?
That's right.
Yep. Also, you've got the Body Light website where you do hypnotherapy, past life therapy, meditation, Reiki, different types of healing. So
yes.
You cover a bit of a gamut. Also, UFO Research Queensland is the oldest standing UFO club in Australia. Is that correct?
Yes, we had this conversation last time.
Yeah.
Yes. We found out we're the second oldest by a few months with the Cleveland, Ohio group in the US, but we're the longest continually running group because I think they stopped for a while.
So yeah. What's been happening up that way in the last year, like in terms of reports and activity and that type of thing?
We've had a lot of reports along the coastline and naturally where a lot of the population is. I don't know, Pete. I wonder whether some of it's been hoax devices. You know, you have a lot of these orange going, just sort of drifting.
Mm-hmm.
And I do wonder if they're hoax devices that at various times we have spates of those. People decide to, you know, to let them off. But, you know, people are still seeing objects doing crazy things, which, you know, beyond our physics, beyond our known physics anyway. Of course, these days you've got drones to contend with. That's a real problem. It's becoming a real problem. And here on the Gold Coast, I was reading a news report not that long ago of a giant drone. Now, we're talking professional drones are like, you know, at least 2 meters across, some of them, with these $10,000 cinematic cameras on them for, you know, that people are using them for professional reasons. But, you know, even they are crashing into buildings and causing a lot of damage too. So, you know, it's getting more and more difficult to know what it is exactly that we're looking at.
Yeah.
And what people are seeing.
It's what people aren't talking about too with some of the sightings. I knew, like for myself, it took me a while to tell people that sometimes I would actually be as far out as it seems. I would be on the craft in my third eye. And this is where when I take people out, we do use satellite trackers. Of course, there are things that aren't on that, but I look for changing of direction, power out, blinking in and out, which I've caught on infrared. And like I've said to a lot of the experts that have verified what I've got, in infrared, you can't get something blinking in and out if it's a man-made object or what we think, because the heat signature shows that it's still there. So this is what's being captured. And these are little telltale signs where being an investigator and doing what you do as well, running and being president of the group you are, that's one thing I found common for myself is that some people don't tell the entire truth because it's like, hey, this happened, and then you say something and later on like, well, I didn't tell you this happened.
Yes, and you mean they're reticent to tell you everything? Yeah. Do you know why? I mean, is it because they have unusual, this is the unusual part of their experience you're talking about, is that right?
Yeah. Well, it's just like the, look, it's far enough out that I'm talking about UFOs, but if I tell you the conscious aspect or something else that happened that, you know, you'd think I'm nuts, this is where I think we come to some understanding of maybe some, what would you say, verifying information in terms of, you know, if somebody said there was telepathic communication but they didn't tell you, then another person says it, there's confirming reports of another aspect of the experience rather than, oh, I just saw a craft. There's another aspect to it where, which is understandable, if no one's ever been into this and they've had that happen during a experience, they don't know where to put that.
Yeah, I think it's unrealistic for us to expect someone just to ring up and blurb out everything because you know, 9 times out of 10, when I answer the phone, people will say, look, you know, I'm not crazy, I'm not mad, but I saw this, you know, or I'm not saying it's a UFO, or I'm not saying it's aliens, but, you know, but, you know, and I guess, you know, people have to trust you to be able to reveal everything and that, you know, develop that rapport. And unless you're on the phone with someone for a good, you know, about 15 minutes, you know, you've, and they can hear what you're on about yourself, or if that you're listening to them, that you're interested, then they're not going to open up and tell us everything. And look, frankly, I've in the past, I mean, researchers themselves have held certain aspects back. And in the past, when I was much younger with this and I wanted it to be more scientific, you know, and credible, there were aspects I would pass on to other people, but I wouldn't tell everything, because I was, one, trying to figure it out myself, two, the other researchers weren't talking about that aspect, you know, and three, sometimes people, you know, they say, please don't talk, I don't want to, you know, please hold my confidentiality, which we have to abide by.
Well, it is that type of situation, and I totally respect that when people tell me that, you know, whatever they want to tell me and how secretive they want to be, and it is about building rapport. The problem with a lot of it is, and I was the same in the beginning, I wanted to be scientific, I wanted to be a certain way, and the more I have my experiences, the more places it goes that I never thought it would go or that I could even fathom. But, for example, living with Giles, I've had him on the show when I was up near Mary, he was a scientist for the CSIRO, and we're there, and we've got crafts coming out of the tree going into the ground. And he gave it no validity until me and Lauren, Lauren Kurth and others, I've got a friggin' spotlight on it as it happened, and he didn't believe it he wouldn't have believed it unless we were there.
Yeah.
And this is where, like he said, people want nuts and bolts, but unfortunately, this is beyond nuts and bolts, a way of reference for the human mind, where this is what comes with the experience, and also the conscious aspect again, you know, again with quantum mechanics, things are affected by the observer. So
yeah, and I, you know, for me, I've done a full circle on this. I started off wanting that nuts and bolts scientific, you know, scientific stuff. Well, you know, we're not going to get this. And frankly, now I'm over the call for science, you know, because one, science didn't get on the bus when we needed them. So goodbye. So, you know, they missed that bus. And they're still not on that bus. You know, they're still lagging behind in the UFO field, purely because of arrogance in some respects, skepticism, unrealistic skepticism, you know, and they're not performing true science. They're not going where the information takes them, and that's what a real scientist does. You follow the evidence, you know, and you look at them objectively.
Is the computer on a wobbly table?
Oh, it's on my massage table.
Oh,
I won't touch it.
Just every now and then it's wobbling. But I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah, it's just wobbling every now and then.
That's okay.
What you just said is correct. And I know personally from experience with some researchers, until they found out who I was or a bit more about my story, they were ridiculing me, saying whatever, which is fine on their part. But this is where, and you spoke about this off, or you wrote to me about this off air, and it is right in the sense of credibility and everything else. What is enough credibility? Like, for myself, if somebody sees a murder, they've got a drug history, they've got a bad history, they can go in the court, testify, and that's enough to put the dude away. And today we've got people with the highest credentials and the lowest credentials. Doesn't really matter. They're seeing the same phenomena, which, you know, is really not a phenomena. It's more reconnecting with other parts of ourself, I think, on another level. But what's enough credibility? And at the same time, with scientific understanding, aren't scientists meant to not have a preconceived notion, let the evidence take them where they may? Like, this is problems we do have in the field.
Yeah, it's difficult. The consciousness is really it, like you said, Pete. It's about people who have experiences and see things. It's about their consciousness, the previous paradigm breaking down and rebuilding. And it's about that happening around them, the collective consciousness breaking down and rebuilding. You know, that's not an easy task. And a lot of people who are calling for disclosure expect it to happen in their lifetime. I don't. I see it as, you know, planetary consciousness changing. Although it can happen in an instant, you know, like 9/11, how that had a flow-on effect, a ripple effect went right around the world. It happened out of the blue. But this is something, you know, unless fleets of spaceships show up in around our skies, and I doubt whether that's going to happen, but you never know, then it's going to take, it's a process, an evolving process. We'll have speed ups every now and then, like we've had citizen hearings and we've had the Disclosure Project, the press club in 2001, the press conference. And we're going to have similar things, you know, they'll come up again and again because people in the UFO community will push for that. But they'll take us ahead, you know, a little bit faster. But to, you know, the collective consciousness is slow and creaking, you know, it's very, very slow to change.
Well, it's more complicated than what people think. I actually did a show with Stephen Bassett yesterday. I was on another show with Stephen Bassett and Tom Clearwater.
I listened to it.
Yeah, and I admire what they've both done, what Stephen Greer's done. But there's a huge problem here, and that is everyone's looking outside themselves for something. And everyone's waiting on America. And if you go to all these other countries, not in the Western world or part of it like we are, we're part of America and the UK, they don't really need to be told what we're talking about. They know that something's going on. They don't need verification. But the way I've had it shown to me is that it's going to happen on a scale where it's going to be like a light switch is turned on, this reality. And the way we're dealing with this now is with the same level of consciousness. Every single problem we're dealing with, we're using the same thought pattern. We need to change the process. Mm. And I think people like yourself, having the groups that you've got, doing the research you're doing, you're at the forefront of this actual change and public awareness, which I do give great credit to Stephen Bassett for doing. If it's not going to change, Jack, which I don't think it will in a political system, but it puts a mandate on the forefront, at least it makes public awareness.
Yes, and like I said in our last interview, there's no political motivation for disclosure at the moment. It hasn't changed, you know. Until that comes around, until there's some sort of benefit in it for the government and various subgroups in the government, they're not going to come out and say things, you know. I know that files have been released in various governments' archives, but they just confirm what we already know. They're not the files we really want to see, are they? So, it's a slow process, but it's become more about educating the public, and that's what grassroots levels, grassroots groups do, is we have meetings, we go and speak to community groups, we publish stuff, we do press releases. That's a slow process because there's not many of us either. In Australia, we've got such a small group of people who are really active.
Yeah, definitely. I reckon compared to the rest of the world, we're pretty much out there doing it.
Yeah.
One thing that got me personally when I was in Queensland was if you weren't an experiencer or had seen something, you're actually out of the loop. Everywhere I went, somebody has seen something trippy or had a paranormal, you know, seen a ghost or they've seen a craft or something they can't explain, which is, you know, I went to Mulaney and did a Skywatch there as well, and I'd never been to the Glasshouse Mountains in that area, and that was absolutely beautiful. But everywhere I went, it was like that. How do you find the balance with what you do when talking to the public? Like personally, I screwed up a long time ago because I go from A to Z in 5 seconds, which you can't do. You just can't do that. But dealing with the public, yeah, that's it. It's like you hit him like a truck smashing him. But how do you find that balance? Like, what do you just sort of stick to when you're talking to the public? Sort of strange sightings and cool photos and video, that sort of thing.
I have a PowerPoint that I use that I evolve, you know, depending on what's going on at the time and who I'm speaking to. And I always start off with, you know, what our group does, the longevity of it. Then I show photos of things that people send into us. But I always say, well, this is what the public sends to us, but not necessarily extraterrestrial. Mm-hmm. And then I talk about like Australian cases. I always stick to the Australian stuff because people like to know what's going on in their backyard. And it's so hard for people overseas to get to know about Australian stuff, again, because there's so few of us. But the local people want to know that. So I talk about classic cases. I talk about recent cases that have happened locally. I always bring in the Disclosure Project, you know, the military witnesses, all of that. And then I ask things like, you know, how old is the phenomenon? And I go look at all the ancient art and all those sorts of things. And then I talk about the paranormal effects. That's always last, if we get to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like the effects on people that, like you said last time, you gave up wearing watches, for example. People can become electrically sensitive. They can become precognitive, telepathic, all those different things. They'll also possibly, half of them will have a near-death experience. Some of them will see ghosts, and they become open to this otherworldly connection, so to speak. And that, strangely enough, I find that is what people get really interested in. They're interested in all the other stuff too, but I like to give that well-rounded approach, you know, from nuts and bolts right through to the paranormal. And I think, you know, building up on that, it allows people to swallow it a bit at a time, if you know what I mean. But eventually the paranormal stuff, because, you know, most people have had a paranormal experience of some description, like a ghosty thing or something, or, you know, grandma so-and-so or auntie so-and-so, yeah, they're like that, you know, so they can relate to it, you know. So, yeah, it's a slow process.
It is, but it gets, you know, the awareness out, which is great. That's what's needed. There needs to be some form of public awareness on it. How long have you been part of the Queensland UFO group? What, since the, was it late 80s?
88 I joined.
That's quite a while you've been doing that.
I know, it's going on 27 years this year. I can't believe it. Where does the time go? I mean, my daughter was like a little baby like this when I started.
I'm 31 now.
I know, you could be my son.
How trippy is that? Has there been any sort of, what would you say, sort of traits or common patterns you've seen in that time in terms of reports?
In regard to locations or just...
Whether locations or just strange occurrences during the sightings, just anything that sort of stands out when I say that to you, like any sort of strange patterns?
Strange patterns, isn't it full of strange patterns?
It is full of strange.
Where do I start?
Yeah, what about even areas that you've seen up there in Queensland, like any hotspots?
Yeah, there's been around, the south of Cairns is one that comes up from time to time. Around Gympie, that was through the 90s, that was quite a hot spot. Glasshouse Mountains in the valley there going out to the ocean, at times we've had, you know, groups of sightings. Toowoomba, which is about an hour or so west of Brisbane, so that's Brisbane, and it goes up into the range, so we call it the Brisbane Valley, the Darling Downs, you'd know it as. And so there's been reports along there, quite a lot in that area too. So it's so difficult to know why, though, you know, because is it because one thing gets into the newspaper, which it has, and then that spurs other people on to report things that they've seen in the past 5-10 years, or does it all, you know, what goes on? It's really hard to know what drives reports sometimes, you know, because except for the date, you know, because it's happened, it's all happened now, and you get a group of people coming forward, group of witnesses corroborating groups of sightings. But at other times, you know, we have people suddenly saying, oh, I saw something, but they're random, they're all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, it's happening everywhere.
Yeah, it is. But sometimes people will report things in lumps, but, you know, that's life, isn't it? People are lumpy in their behaviour.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it goes in clumps. Well, like even with Albury, the amount of people that came forward to me, and then when I did research going back further patterns into Albury, there was lots of, whether it was truck drivers, police officers, school teachers, there was lots of activity, but it was spread out. Agnes Water, there was something about that area. People say it's a portal. I believe after living there, the place is, after the amount of weird stuff that happened there. But what started happening was a lot of people saying to me, "People, have you noticed anything when driving into the area, maybe about 20 minutes out?" And it's like you drive through something. Just energetically, everything changes. But while there with Mary and Giles, they were telling me about some stuff before I got up there in terms of sightings. But I recommend if you get a chance to go and visit Mary or get up there, do it, because it's off its nut. I filmed some fantastic, like the amount of stuff we had going on up there, it's something is about that area. And apparently Agnes Water on the ley lines connects up to Uluru. So there's some little strange aspects there with that type of thing.
And there's also recently I've collaborated with Barry Taylor, researcher Barry Taylor. We've started the Strange Encounters Down Under Facebook page. And because what happened was last year we were down in Glen Innes, because I've actually got a close friend who lives in there who's a crop circle researcher. And Barry used to live there too, but he's now moved to Brisbane and part of our group, by the way. We were down there for various reasons, and we went to the Sky Watch they had, and we were told by one of the local people about this grass, this circle that had appeared in grass about 5 or 6 years ago, and you could still see it today. So we said we've got to go and see this. You know, what's that about? And he said, oh, it was a front page story and all this. Well, as it turned out, it was in the newspaper. We did track down the article. We have been out to the site many times, you know, doing things out there, and we will report on that and doing up a little mini doco about that investigation. But you know, the amount of stories that exist in small towns that you never hear about, you know, things that people have told me in the past, and I was reviewing some of them the other day about up North Queensland in the cane, back in the cane fields back in the 60s, I think, 60s and 70s. They used to have workers living in cottages on the properties, and often they would see, you know, UFOs, and I mean close up craft. You could see they weren't of this world, and you could see, you know, some of them were round, some of them were oblong, and they'd be sort of, some would be spinning, sparkling out underneath them, and that some people would tell me about telepathic communication between the craft and them, you know, obviously possibly between the occupants of the craft, if there were any, because some of them could be sky critters, as they're called, you know. So there's a lot goes on that in those local areas, and if anyone really wanted to find out more about what's going on, you'd just, you know, drive up the coast, go and knock on the doors of shops in the doors of stores in small towns and go talk to the people, and I'm sure you would dig up a whole lot of stories that we've never heard of.
No, I recommend anyone that wants to see, like, you can see something anywhere. I've shown that time and time again, but Queensland is just the environment for it. I've got to say that if you want to see something, go up to Queensland, go and do some researching, put the antenna out, and something can happen. It definitely can. And you're right, there's the amount of places I've come across, or people have gotten contact with me in Victoria and New South Wales, and it's almost like a Stephen King movie. You will talk to one dude, and all of a sudden in this small community, you'll have 10 of them, and they're telling you correlating stories.
Yes, yes.
And you're just like, this is trippy stuff. Like,
well, we've just came back 2 days ago from Glen Innes to visiting the site again, and you know, and taking footage, and it's we spoke to people. Oh yes, because Barry used to live in the town, this one guy said, oh, you're the UFO man, aren't you? Yeah. And he said, oh, I could tell you a million stories. I've seen this and this, and my father's seen this and this, my grandfather saw this and this, you know, like, so we're going to go back and film him. But you know, other people, and there was a story by another man about his son who had seen, well, we thought it was a Yowie. We don't really know. We've got to go and investigate that too. So there's a lot, you know, just start talking about it and people just blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
Well, it's good you did that Mary Rodwell interview. And if you're just starting to do filming and that, like you used to talk, that's what's needed. And that's fantastic. I think a lot more groups need to do that. Reports are needed as well. It's weird. Like, I've even noticed with books and everything, talking to other authors, people just want to watch stuff these days as well. rather than just reading everything. But it is important to log, and you get information from the written word in a different way than from when watching.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I've had a very privileged experience of answering our contact from the public, you know, for UFO reports and events, whatever, for many, 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 a couple of decades now. And speaking to someone on the phone, again, it's different to speaking to someone face-to-face, but how many people in Australia get to have that experience of speaking to thousands of people who've reporting something? And so I was really, I was saying to Barry, I think that we need to give other people that experience. So what we are planning to do is interview people who've had strange experiences so that the public can actually hear it for themselves, rather than going to a conference and hearing what a researcher is presenting, which is good, but you know, they need to hear it for themselves.
That's good.
They get something out of it, you know, so we want to provide that platform for
them. You hear so many people like us in the past, and even this is why I do this as well. It's like I'd rather people hear it from other people in their own words. So you could say to a reporter, oh, this bloke said yada yada yada, but what about if you could show them? Oh, you can see for yourself what he said. That's awesome, and I know of Barry. I don't know him personally. I haven't talked to him or anything. My brother's got his book, and he's been doing a lot of great work for years. He's been getting strange stuff as well.
Well, he's the Damien Knott of the 90s.
I'm going to get Damien on hopefully once, because he's doing the Paracon with me this year, and Travis Bolton's going to be there.
So, yes, I know, and I'm planning to go.
Yeah, Travis is actually going to be on the show, so we're going to get a couple down, and it would be good if you go. That would be good because there's a lot of people from Queensland going.
Yeah.
Ramaka and a few of them, all them are coming down. So my partner's also presenting a talk up there too. So should be good. I can't wait to catch up and meet yous all in person. I've met a few of yous in person, but it'll be good just to... Is Barry going as well?
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's good. It's worth having something like that. So what do you think's needed in the field these days in terms of reports with what's going on? Like, we were talking before about how credentials and everything else, but who's right, who's wrong, whose word can you take for it, who can't you, you know...
Look, I think we have to still keep reporting. People have to keep – let me back that conversation up. We still need to encourage and support people who've had close encounters and people who've had sightings, and encourage them to speak up about what's happened to them. We've got to keep working on – I don't know if we can, but hopefully changing that climate – so they feel more confident about doing that, because we need to hear more. We need to hear more. Also, we need people who are showing video material footage, for example. They need to use those apps, you know, and find out what's a plane, what's an iridium flare, what's a satellite, blah, blah, blah. And before they shove it up on Facebook and YouTube and all that, you know, which is great, but... You know, a lot of it is not, you know, it's explainable.
Well, a lot of it is explainable, and this is where I've said to people, you know, when I do the sky watches, I show them everything so they can see that I'm not talking shit, they can see the times. Yeah. And I say, look for what iridium flares are. Look for what the space station is. So many times I know it's the space station when people have said whatever. And, you know, I've even got crafts going past the space station which just go, you know, show something unusual. But, you know, there is so much crap out there. Like, for example, third phase of moon. They've got the website. They're getting millions of hits. 98% of what they show is fake. I can look at it within 2 seconds and know it's fake. That's not saying I know more than anyone else. But what it does is it clouds the field. Now, these dudes who run it, and I've never hit out at these dudes or anything, but the guys that run it are into film filmography, and they know about special effects because they've worked on it. I've heard that from one of them. Now, the problem is... If you're looking at something, you know it was fake, why put it up? Well, it's because of the hits. Why because of the hits? Well, they get something from it. This is clouding and muddying the field. And even though I've had direct contact, which continues, I'm still left with a billion more questions each time that happens.
Yeah, and
we're trying as a collective to try to come to some understanding, and this is a problem.
Yeah, and I think what happens is when you've been in the field for a while, you start to get jack of that muddiness, you know, because you're trying to make sense of data. And it's the same thing that happened to the crop circles in the UK. You know, there are a lot of hoaxes came forward, and circle makers and known circle makers who have websites and all that sort of stuff. So it just clouded the whole thing, and it sort of diffused it. And of course, in both fields, you can have people who can come in and use that, you know, if for their own agendas, whether it's personal egos or whether it's driven by, national security. You just don't know.
Well, this is the thing, and is something else orchestrating it sometimes on a conscious level? You know, these are all the questions, because like I do say to people, and I've heard Whitley Strieber say it and others, and I 100% agree, which is why I say it, some of these beings are part of orchestrating the cover-up or why things haven't come out in a certain way. So this is where there's so many different aspects, and I think all we can do is log it, tell it how people tell it when we represent a story or report it. And again, people have got to make up their own mind, which I think we need a lot more of, and I think not blind belief, which is a problem why we've got a lot of the situations we're in. It's just belief. It's not knowing or looking at things logically. I think skeptics are good. I think we need skeptics. I don't think we need debunkers.
No, exactly.
Because I think with skeptics, we get both sides of the argument, and so long as they've got no preconceived notions, you know, they can weigh up the evidence for themselves and go, well, look, this is trippy, so I've got to go down this avenue because this can't be explained. So, you know, it's one of those things. How many reports, like you don't have to give a specific number, but how much has happened there in Queensland in the last year in terms of, do you reckon it's a few hundred, few thousand?
No, we had just over 100 reports. I think it was about 120 or something. And, they've just gone back to what it was like before the 90s happened, when everything just skyrocketed. But, you know, you never know when that can happen again. Mm. You know, there was a report of orange lights up the north coast here and the Sunshine Coast. You might have seen it on our Facebook page. And we had... Gosh, we had about five. That report reached about 5,000 people, because so many other people reported seeing it too. Mm. What it was, group of orange lights. I don't know what it was, whether it was, you know, a hoax or whatever. But you know, people are paying attention to that. So, just over 100 reports, and that's probably average for the last few years.
Every year,
just over 100.
Just over 100, all right.
Yeah,
and a lot of them have been orange lights.
I'd say maybe a third, maybe a third, just off the top of my head. But it's harder to, more challenging to collect the reports now too, because people will post stuff everywhere, you know, not just on our page. I'll post it on, you know, wherever. And this is what Keith Basterfield has done with Paul Dean, is tried to collate that on a monthly basis so we know what's going on in Australia. And I was saying to my own people before that, you know, it's getting harder and harder to know what's going on here in Australia because of that, because of the different way people report things now too. And they report it all around the world. You know, I'm read reports from overseas about something happened in Brisbane and I never saw it.
Yeah.
So it's harder and harder. It's just much more of a challenge. So we've got the diffuse way of people report. We've got drones. You know, we've got the muddiness about what people report. It's much more difficult.
Well, it's good what Keith is doing in terms of that, because for the, like, Mary sent me that when it's being pulled out. I don't know if she's got it directly from Keith, but Mary sent me them. I've gone through it, and it is interesting. I personally have just stopped reporting because it's just, you know, it's just crazy. I've got a thousand different things now, and, you know, a lot of witnesses to it. And same with Damien. Damien's got that much now that has reached around 4,000, and there's a lot of it's been verified behind me, Masan.
Yeah.
And hopefully when we all get together, it goes off, because every time me and Damien get together, the activity just goes mental.
Yeah. The thing is now, you know, and has been like this for a while, is to get some meaning out of that data. We've had oodles of data for decades, you know. What does it actually mean? And then, I mean, most of us accept that it means that we're getting visited from whether it's other dimensions, other planets, from outer space, from, you know, wherever. So we've come to that understanding because the evidence is just overwhelming. But okay, so what does that mean? And what? How do we feel about that? And this is where I'd like to see more dialogue on Facebook by UFO groups, perhaps at least in Australia, and the public talking about, well, what? How do we feel about that? Who do we want to communicate with? How do we communicate in a way that we feel safe and we feel happy about, and that it's going to serve an equal agenda? You know, we can meet those beings on an equal ground. That's what I'd like to see, more dialogue about that. Oops, well, sorry, I'm tapping this table.
Well, that's exactly what I've seen. And with the work that I do when I take people out, I always say, look, I just want to learn more about whoever we're interacting with tonight that's in service mode, would like to learn more about us and about whatever this is that's going on. And I think that's an equal part, because this way you connect with different agendas. As long as, you know, it's in line. And this is where a conscious part of it is the main aspect of, to me, everything that goes on. But there needs to be some dialogue going on. And again, what do we do with it? Obviously, with the data and reports, we could go back to Blue Book, we can go back to the Cometa report, we can go back to SOM, we can go to Grudge, we can go to so many different reports and look at the Australian files, New Zealand and Canadian files, and everything else. These things blink in and out. They can change direction at the drop of a hat. They can do whatever the hell they want, which shows that we're dealing with something far superior. But but where from here? And this is where, it looks like we the people have to do something about this rather than anyone else, because the governments, I think, in my opinion, I know that some of the government know a little of what's going on. I don't believe they know everything, but what do they do? And I think this has been the big cover-up. They've never said that UFOs don't exist. They said they're not a threat to national security in America anyway. So when we look at that, it's like, well, really, as far past as extraterrestrials, these dudes can pop in and out, and we might be able to do it, but we don't know the real mechanism or how it's done or navigation. What do we do with that? And I think that might be a valid point on their part to go, shit, what do we do with this? Like, really, what can you do with that? Because if something's coming in from a different vibration or whatever people want to say, what can you do with that if you can't?
Well, I think at that level what they've tried to do is bring down those craft and reverse engineer the technology and build defensive weapons against it, because even if they are friendly, you never know when some may show up that are not. That's what the government's thinking. And we'd be idiots not to think that ourselves. Yeah. You know, you've got to – no one – I can't believe everyone out there in the universe is friendly. That's just rubbish. So it's a concern, and it's something that people don't talk – this is a side of ufology that people don't talk about. A lot of people like to cruise along on the love and light, and it's okay, and we're making connections with these beautiful beings. But, you know, I've spoken to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who've had experience with non-beautiful beings. They've been terrified out of their wits, and it's not just about their own panic. It's about their experience and what was done to them and against their will. So this is, you know, we had a lot of talk about that during the 90s with the abduction experiences, and then it just went all sort of quiet on that front. And we had the mixed motive cases around 2000 came out, where it's positive and negative, and then we had all this positive stuff. But, you know, it's like the abduction, the negative aspects of, you know, contact have been brushed under the carpet. And I think we've got to remain adult about this and look at it all.
Well, I think that is a very valid and important point. And this is what I've said to somebody, like to a lot of, not to somebody, I've said to a lot of people, that you can't, knowing what we know and experiencing what we've experienced and doing what we've done, especially you for how long you have been doing it, it's actually a responsibility to inform people about both sides of, you know, service and self-service. I think it's very important, because if you don't, especially with people who are experiencers, it's like they're a beacon of light, they're open. So other things can come through just by the intent and the how open they are. If they don't, you know, if they're looking for help, somebody to talk to, and they're not aware that their intent can just attract negative stuff as well as positive stuff, that's very wrong on our part. And I had to learn this myself. I can remember one night, I had a friggin' reptilian grey in my room, and I didn't sleep in there for a year. And this is only going back a couple of years. So this is where, you know, it can happen to anybody. And I think it is important. I think when we put this on a disclosure level or whatnot, it needs to be looked at. Because if we're going to grow and become part of a greater collective and upgrade, we need to be aware of these things.
Yeah, we need to be mentally prepared and emotionally prepared. I don't know if we can be physically prepared at grassroots level. That we have to leave to, you know, the groups that have access to technology that can, say, defend the planet. You know, and this is the struggle, Pete. This is where we have it's been the struggle all along, is contact from elsewhere. And is it good? Is it bad? You know, whose agenda is it serving? And I think that's a big part of the cover-up, because you imagine people who are so terrified about making contact. And like I said before, if those fleets of spacecraft did show up in the sky, can you imagine? Generally, there'd be anarchy in the streets, I reckon. You know, that's how I feel, that I don't think people are as... It's one thing to say, yes, we accept that there's life elsewhere in the universe, but it's a whole big step to say, okay, I accept that life is visiting planet Earth. You know, that's a big pill to swallow. So I don't think that pill is going to take a little while to go down. And it may need some honey, you know.
Yeah, well, also the other aspect of it, which was one of the hardest things for myself personally, was realizing that I have to go back and re-educate myself on everything. Because if you question... You go, well, if this is happening, and I know this is real because I've experienced it, people have experienced it with me, and they're telling me it's not real, I have to go back through history, through all my education, and I can't come to some proper conclusion and everything, but you've sort of got to do it like a skeptic. You've got to go, this is for, this is against, let's look at the evidence. Mm. And basically realizing that everything you know may be a lie. That's hard.
That is
very hard, because now I'm like, that's too much education. I just got to do it day by day.
Another challenge I've found at various times is going about my day-to-day life knowing what I know. That's another one. Some people have asked me, you know, how do you balance that? How do you know that? How do you balance that changed worldview with still having to get up and you know, do the dishes, go to work, do the shopping, all this sort of stuff? It's sometimes you can feel, I feel quite dissociated from my surroundings, you know, and I think, am I of this world? Or, you know, it sort of does something with your mind.
Yeah, it does. And that's happened with me.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
And it is hard. Like, I didn't even find out. I still don't know what happened in Paris. Apparently there was some shooting there a couple of days ago and I didn't hear about it till yesterday. And then another plane went missing and I heard about that days later and everyone's like, don't you watch the news? I'm like, it's almost been a year since I've seen a telly, so I don't know what's going on. But I do feel a change in vibration in terms of energy. I'm not so, because I used to wake up, put on Sunrise or the Today Show, and 10 minutes of bullcrap, but I've noticed a change.
I don't watch it either. So, and a lot of people in our group don't watch TV, and I think sometimes it's just easier not to know about that stuff because it gets a bit depressing.
Well, it is, and this is where what you guys do and what we're experiencing, this is where it leads. It's not just about UFOs and the occupants. Uh-huh. It leads to a shift in consciousness, and obviously we can see this with yourself. You were saying last time you had a healing center in the 90s, was it, and that type of thing. This is where it went for you. You evolved in ways, I guess, that you probably wouldn't have even thought you would have in younger years.
Well, I would never have seen that coming, but I've always had an interest in the paranormal. Many, many years ago in my teenage years, I used to read, you probably wouldn't know about it, I used to read Australasian Post, which was a magazine that had all the weirdo stuff in it, you know, the paranormal and weird stuff that you'd find. And then it eventually closed down, but it fed my need to want to know more, to open my mind, to explore things. And, I haven't stopped there. I still run an afterlife discussions page, and last year I closed down the meetings, but I was running monthly meetings with that as well. So, and I'll be starting that again this year too. So it's just a constant opening of the mind, you know, and changing the worldview all the time. And I think if you still have the same worldview you have now that you had 10 years ago, you got a problem.
Yeah, definitely.
Just snap out of it, people.
No, well, that's, you know, and I'm forever changing with my views and things as well. And even with my interactions, I've been lied to understand a greater concept down the road. And I think that's how we've just got to know that we don't know it all and we can't be set in our ways. We've got to show some leeway. Where are things for you at the moment? Obviously, you've had things happen, which is why you do what you do. You've got the passion. I'd say that we've all got some type of obsession to be doing how much we do. But it's like there's no ifs or buts. We've got to do what we've got to do. Where are things for you at the moment in terms of, like, your experiences, your guidance, like your consciousness state, how things happen, and what's driving you and pushing you to do what you're doing at the moment?
That's a good question. I usually answer that question with, well, I can't not do it. It's a calling. It's a real calling. I think there's a The UFO group, UFO Research Queensland, is a real mad running that and having the interaction with people once a month and seeing and hearing their opinions change over time is very interesting for me too. I love people. I love to study human behaviour. I think, you know, for me, the UFO subject and all these other subjects are really about us, not about that. So it's about how we interact and change and grow and transform, are transformed by these interactions, these catalysts, whatever they are. For some people, it may be losing a job or being flooded. For me, it's this sort of stuff, you know. So we've all got to grow and change. And who knows, maybe it's what I came here to do this time around. I don't really know. But I think what motivates me is to – obviously, there's something in my mind that's not satisfied yet. Otherwise, I'd let it go. And I want to know more as I get older too. I want to know more about, because my own mortality looms on the horizon. So, you know, I want to know more about what goes on after death, what can exist in those other dimensions, where do shamans go when they enter those dimensions, what life forms are there, will I exist there, can extraterrestrials cross over into those dimensions or space beings or whatever they are, and how it all fits together. You know, I want to know the big picture. I really do. And I guess that's the driver for me.
I think in between lives we do know this, and it's like we've got some form of friggin' amnesia while we're here. And like with myself, I'm a vehicle for I don't know what. I've got so much working through me that half of the time, even on these shows, I know it's not even me doing operating anything.
Yeah.
But the near-death experience, like you brought up, that connects everything. Whether it's the ghosts, paranormal hauntings. Whether it's ET experiences, there's lots of stuff where people see dead relatives, which are actually other beings, or they've got actual experiences where they're dead and they've seen other realms. I've had friends that had ayahuasca and they've described the same stuff that I've seen in a meditative state, which blew me out because two of these people had the same experience while taking ayahuasca at the same time, which apparently isn't meant to happen. But there's an interconnectedness from things like that, which some shamans do use. They do that in Peru and that type of thing.
Yeah.
Think about trying it myself in time anyway.
Yeah. I had I do my own shamanic journey, and in one journey I had an experience where I was sucked up in a beam into a spaceship. And on the spaceship, these beings came forward who were very human-looking. And I said, because you always journey with an intent to have one question answered. And my question was, why am I interested in all this stuff, which is exactly what's underlying your question. You know, how does it all come together? And this being came forward and said, this is how you should teach people to make contact. This way they won't be frightened. And it just hit me, and I thought, wow, that makes sense. It's the modality that you use, and for me, that modality is shamanic journeying. And it would have been 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, I would have said, oh my God, that's a load of that's just my mind playing tricks. But now I understand much more about shamanism and how everything is real for them. Everything, and it all has meaning, and it all has purpose and direction, and takes us on a path that we're meant to go. It's all relevant. So when people have subjective contact, for example, it's relevant.
There's a reason for it.
Yeah, we don't cast that aside. It's real. It's real for them, and it's really happened in some form for them, right? And they can teach us things from that. You know, so, and I've had that experience where the three small beings were beside the bed. I didn't know why I had it. I understand more about the process of having that experience. I haven't had that experience again. But it's still, I guess that's another driving force too, is I'm still trying to understand what actually happened then, you know, and that's remained unresolved too. And there are times where I've wanted to sort, well, you know, maybe after 20 years I'm ready to explore, you know, that with some hypnosis. But I, as a hypnotherapist, I also know that we can make stuff up, but then the shamanic perspective comes in and says, well, doesn't matter, everything's relevant, you know, like, so it's a big journey and I'm still on it.
It is a huge journey, and you know, that's a few important points that you bring up too. But with the shamanic side of things, what's incorporated when you do that? Like, I know for myself now, there's almost within 10, any time I meditate, there's a certain being I can interact with at will if I want to, as long as it's open on the other end. And you said that to me 10 years ago again. I'd go, like you said, you know, no way, because it's going down a different format. And this being used to appear physically, where now it's, I'm meeting them halfway and we're on a level where we can both operate without draining each other. What's the shamanic side of things when you incorporate contact, asking for messages to connect with whatever for that answer? What's incorporated in that? Like a method. What's the method?
Oh, the method of it. Yes, yes. Okay. Well, in shamanic journeying, for example, you're using drums. So I don't have a drum myself, but so I use a drumming CD that I have. And what happens is you need to be trained in how you do your journey. So the first journey you need to – you always work with a power animal and your spirit guides. So my very first journey was to meet my power animal. The next one was my spirit guide. From then I've journeyed to find my my shamanic song and to understand more about what's going on planet Earth. I've had some pretty amazing journeys, but you actually – go into an altered state, like meditation, except with the drumming at a particular beat, it seems to take you into, it's much easier. It's much, much easier to get into that state. And you journey, you mentally imagine yourself going down something, and it may be down into the ground or down into a cave or underneath the tree through the roots or something like that. And that's where you go and meet your power animal. So I always do journeys with my power animal and my spirit guides, but generally my power animal. And this time I just laid down and I wanted to know why I was doing what I was doing. And then my mind took over, and that's not my conscious mind, my unconscious mind, once it had come to the fore through the drumming, and it showed me that image. And shamanism, like when I've done healing on people, it uses natural symbols often. So I did a journey on someone to find, just to scan their body to see if there was something wrong with them. And there was a twig came up on their right side near their appendix. And I said, did you ever have something done on your, I saw a twig there, you know, what could that represent? And she said, oh, I had that, I had my right ovary removed about a year ago. So it's a different way of doing it. I don't know. It's strange how it happens. I can't really explain it, how it happens. You can see various elements will come up. When you practice it more, you can walk around your garden and you can interact with the tree. You become more telepathically aware of what's going on. Now, my scientific mind, my left brain might say, well, this is just a modality that teaches you how to do what you can do naturally. That's my left brain talking. But my right brain says, this is a whole new world. You know, this is a whole new world I wasn't aware of that existed around me, and I'm in that environment, and I can tap into all these sorts of things and get all sorts of information if I really want to. So it's a magical process in a way, because I don't understand it.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Like, I know from myself doing similar stuff, it's the unknown, the experience, the knowledge you get from it, the understanding of what you can get from it. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful thing.
And I think we're Westerners trying to learn from scratch without any teachers about this. You know, if we were an indigenous society, we would have learned about these. We would have grown up with this mental mindset, but we don't. So we're trying to understand it, and we're grappling and grasping with what is it all about. If we had that context, and the teachers are around, and there's not many good Shamanic teachers here in Australia, that teach traditionally, I meant to say, that it's difficult, but that's what we do. We stumble in the dark.
Well, we've got no manual, so we've got to basically do that. We've got to stumble in the dark and try and do what we can with what we've got. And it's trial and error, goes with what works, doesn't work. I hate people going to others like as if they're some guru and they're really not where, you know, again, I look for the fruit in people by, do they, to help people empower themselves rather than if I go to this dude, I'm going to get the answers, you know. This is where... There is a lot of that, and you get a lot of that around the world, even in some of the non-Western societies. But here we are lacking a lot in a lot of ways, and it's good that the people like yourself and there's groups like what you run are doing what they're doing. Where's things going for you at the moment in terms of with the UFO groups? Like you've got to have the interviews happening more in the videos and that type of thing. You've got the meetings and all that. Is there anything new in the pipeline for UFO Research Queensland?
In March, we're running an investigator course. Barry and I went down to...
Sydney, didn't you? And do it by the Damien.
Yes, Damien. Yep. Brian Dickerson, who was the previous past president, because Brian has a degree in science, so he ran us through most of it. Then Damien Knott was there showing us some of his footage and talking about that. Barry Taylor was talking to us about sky watching and showing people the various apps that you can use. There's a lot more than people realise. And that was really good. And then on the Saturday night, we did the sky watch as well. And that was good to, you know, I don't think we actually saw too much, but it was good to connect with people. But we haven't done a training course here for a long time. So I said, well, I'm motivated now. We've got to go and repeat that, run a practical ufology course and get people out there talking to others because we need more help. And need more help.
Is there many people in the group that are willing to get out and do boots on the ground top of investigation?
There are. We all are. We're all really busy.
Yeah.
You know, we've got Dr. Gemma Feldman. She's a biological anthropologist in our group. She does 2 radio shows, you know, for free, voluntary, as well as produces the journal and all the other things she does. So, and we've got our vice chairperson, Tino Pesamenti. He does the week. He works for himself, but he's also does the weekly show on Radio 4BC on Tuesday nights, awesome. The paranormal panel, you know. I'm out there talking to community groups and going out and doing investigations. And thankfully, we've got Barry Taylor as well now. And the other people, we've had a couple of people quite ill this year, so that's not been good. But, yeah, just everyone's really, really busy. And that's the thing with volunteers. They just do so much.
Yeah, I know. And that's where I put my hats off to everyone. I know what it's like myself just doing all this. And, you know, it's ongoing, but you do it for the passion of it. And like you said, it's like there's no other ifs or buts. You just got to do what you've got to do. So to anyone in the Queensland area that wants to help Cheryl, get off your asses and go and do this course. Go on, help.
Please.
Well, Queensland is, in my opinion, more than anywhere. There is so much. Everywhere I went up there, it's just off its nuts. So...
Yes. We've got Kay doing the CE5. We've got Kay McCulloch doing the CE5. Lauren Kurth doing the CE5. Paul Bolt on the Sunshine Coast. He does the Blurred Truth Radio show now.
I actually met Paul at Giles's place.
Oh, right, yep. So there's a lot of active people here, and we work together. We connect and affiliate, you know, and it's a lot of work. And we're all trying to earn a living at the same time, you know.
Well, that's the thing. People think, oh, everyone's got money that's doing this, and it's like, well...
No, it's all on a shoestring.
Yeah.
You're giving up your time where you could be earning money to actually do this stuff, you know. But that's choices we all have to make about what we're doing here.
It is, and we do it because we've got to do it. Like, there's something else in play with doing this because it's like, anybody else would say you're nuts, you know, but then it's, when you're in the situation, you just do it. So
it's
really weird. What I'll do, I'll have links to UFO Research Queensland and
bodylight.com.au.
Yep, I'll have a link there as well. We'll wrap it up there, but thank you so much for being on the show. Again, anyone up in the Queensland area, get off your backside and go and do the course. We need more of this.
And come to our meetings too. We have our monthly meetings on the last Friday of every month at the Kenmore Library. In this January, we're going to have a panel and an open forum. In February, we've got Lee Heather coming to speak about remote viewing at this stage anyway. So, yeah, be good.
Awesome. And I'll see you soon at the Paracon as well.
You will, yes.
That will be good. So, and if Barry's going, it will be good to meet him as well. Damien's going to be there. Heaps of people are going to be there. So it will be good all-round catch-up for everyone to get mixing the energies and just all meet up. That'll be fantastic. But, Cheryl, thanks heaps for being on the show, and we'll have to catch up again. And I'll try not to leave it a year again next time.
That's okay. Thanks very much for having me, Pete.
All good, Dale. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.